Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Stay tuned for another Best of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, because in this episode of the Football's History Headlines, we discuss Jim Marshall's Wrong Way Run, that very famous run, as well as many more Hall of Fame birthdays and legendary stories. These and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of the PigskinDispatch.com, and we have your Pigskin Daily History football headlines coming up for October 25th. And let's get right at it. We'll start with October 25th, 1884. Yale entered in the 1884 season riding a 17-game winning streak and had won multiple national championships in the past few years. The powerhouse Bulldog squad really flexed their muscles against Dartmouth that season. It marked the first game ever where 100 points or more were scored, as Yale toppled Dartmouth 113-0. Then a few years after that, October 25th, 1905, Annapolis, Maryland, the very first college football Crab Bowl Classic is played. The U.S. Naval Academy and the university are less than 30 miles away from each other, so it's not a surprise that these two would clash regularly on the gridiron. The series ended temporarily in 1934 after Maryland protested a controversial play. Apparently, according to the Wikipedia account, Navy's go-ahead touchdown play in the 1934 edition of the series was deemed illegal by the Maryland brass after a film review. Very interesting development in football history for 1934 on a film review. The series resurfaced in the 1950s a couple of times, and then in a 1964 contest where a Terrapin player flashed his middle finger towards Navy fans. It occurred after a punt by Navy, where an angry Terp, Jerry Fishman, was penalized for an unnecessary hard hit that injured Skip Orr directly in front of the Navy faithful. The jeers from the Navy stands increased above normal and were directed at Fishman. In response, Fishman approached the brigade of midshipmen section and flipped them off. Later, Fishman was penalized again for a late hit on Heisman Trophy winning Navy quarterback Roger Staubach, and again heckling from the Navy crowd prompted Fishman to give the obscene gesture for a second time. High-ranking Navy officers noticed Fishman's middle finger and were outraged by the disrespectful nature. The always taking the high road Staubach later told the press that Fishman told the fans he thought Maryland was number one and got his fingers wrong. Navy brass suspended the series for a period of time, which lasted until the 2005 season. The result of that first matchup of the schools came with Navy defeating Maryland 17-0 back in 1905. Our next history headline takes place on October 25th, 1953, the Polo Grounds, New York City, New York. It was a sloppy day, to say the least, at the famed Polo Grounds on this day in late October 1953. The Cleveland Browns were well into their fourth season in the NFL after dominating the now-defunct All-American Football Conference. The Giants were a mid-level team at best in 53, but being at home in the mud could be a great equalizer in the game, and it was. Cleveland Browns quarterback Otto Graham set a club record with four fumbles as the Giants defense did everything they possibly could to claw the ball away from the Browns. A story on Cleveland.com's website recounts how the only scoring sequence occurred. The long count paid off for the Cleveland Browns that day. The long count was a strategic maneuver designed to draw the Giants' rookie defensive lineman, Joe Ramona, offsides as the Browns lined up for a field goal attempt in the second period. Center Frank Gatsky of the Browns had noticed the youngster was a little jumpy, so as the Browns lined up to try the field goal from the 18-yard line, Gatsky suggested to Otto Graham that the delay in snapping the ball a few counts may be of benefit. It worked. Ramona jumped off on the count. and the Giants were penalized 5 yards, and it was first and goal from the 6-yard line. 2 plays later, Graham carried the ball through the left side of the line for the only score of the game. It was a rare occasion where one player could turn the ball over 4 times in a game and escape as the hero, as the Browns won 7-0 against the New York Giants in the Mudfest. Our next stop on the history timeline takes us to October 25th, 1964, and possibly the most well-known sports blooper in American sports history could be the wrong way run by Viking Jim Marshall. On the play, defensive standout for the Minnesota, Jim Marshall, who was having his way with the San Francisco 49ers on that day, and even on the play in question, when Marshall got his paws on Niners quarterback Joe Mira and caused Mira to lose control of the ball. Marshall promptly picked up the ball and proceeded to run 66 yards to what he presumed was an extremely easy scoop and score. Unfortunately for Jim and the Vikes, the Marshall had run the wrong direction for a safety. Marshall was a fantastic player. In fact, he was a dominant player in his era of football. Unfortunately, for all his fantastic plays were somewhat put aside in place of this embarrassing moment of confusion. Next, we're going to talk about 2 distinct different years, but both happened to be the college football holy war between Notre Dame and Boston College. The first one took place October 25th, 1997. It was the 9th annual holy war, as Notre Dame defeated Boston College 52-20 at South Bend. Then, 6 years later, in 2003, October 25th, the 15th annual holy war, Boston College returned the favor and defeated Notre Dame 27-25 in a thriller at Chestnut Hill. We hope right now, while you're taking this little break from our football history, that you'll hit the subscribe button on this podcast player, and also that you'll email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. And now a couple words from one of my buddies at the sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, folks. Are you curious about some of the unique players, teams, games, and events of pro football's past? If you are, please check out my bi-weekly podcast, The Pigskin Past. I'm Joe Zagorski, a member of the Pro Football Writers of America and the Pro Football Researchers Association. I've written 3 books about pro football history, and I'm currently writing my 4th. Now, my era of expertise is the 1970s in the NFL. Heck, I even have a Facebook page by that title, and my very first book also has the same title, The NFL in the 1970s. But every now and then I check out a different era, so I might surprise you. Anyway, if you like pro football history, please check out my bi-weekly segment here called The Pigskin Past when you get a chance. I think you'll enjoy it.
Now let's talk about some Hall of Famers from the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame that are celebrating birthdays and the anniversaries of their birth. And we'll first go to October 25th, 1878. Bill Reed, a fullback from Harvard University, was born. Bill played during the very brutal period of American football, just at the end of the 19th century. He was a good player for Harvard, though, and he became the first Harvard player to score 2 touchdowns in a game against Yale. After his playing days, he became the head coach of the Crimson. It was in these early 1900s as a coach where Reed truly made his biggest contributions to football. The NFF states that Reed and fellow coaches from Yale, Princeton, and Dartmouth were called to Washington, D.C. to talk to President Theodore Roosevelt as he was incensed over the violence in the game that was threatening to ban the sport. Reed convinced Roosevelt not to end the game he loved and coerced all present to sign a contract stating they would adhere to the rules of football and promote change and make the game safer for players. Teddy R. was satisfied with this and let football stay in American sports. As Reed's record was 33-1, the National Football Foundation selected Bill Reed to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1970. The next legend to talk about on the anniversary of their birth took place on October 25th, 1917 in Elkins, West Virginia. Former University of Pittsburgh fullback Marshall Goldberg arrived on the scene. Goldberg played for the Panthers from 1936 through 1938 season, and the school sported a record of 25-3-2 when he was on the team. In his first game with the Panthers, he rushed for 208 yards against Ohio Wesleyan and led the nation in yards on the ground with 886 for the year. The National Football Foundation goes on to tell us that the 1936 team won the Rose Bowl, the 37 team won the national championship, and the 1938 team lost 2 games when Goldberg was out with injuries. Goldberg was an All-American in 1937 and 1938. In the Heisman Trophy voting, he was third behind Clint Frank of Yale and Wizard White of Colorado in 1937, and behind only Davey O'Brien of Texas Christian in 1938. The National Football Foundation selected Marshall Goldberg to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1958. Next birthday stop, October 25th, 1921, Bob Stuver arrived via Stork delivery. Bob was a former halfback from Missouri. He set records of plenty at the school, including the most points in a season and a career, as well as the most touchdowns in a game and career TDs. During the war years, he played for DePauw. The NFF says Stuber was third in the nation rushing in 1941, second in 1942, and he was at DePauw in 1943 as a Navy V6 trainee. DePauw had a 5-0-1 season, and Stuber led the nation in scoring with 129 points. The National Football Foundation selected Bob Stuber to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1971. Here's another legend to talk about. October 25th, 1954, Gifford Nielsen, a quarterback from BYU, was born. He made his mark in his sophomore season when Brigham Young started out 0-2 and were down late in the third game. Nielsen led BYU on an offensive surge as the team scored twice and pulled out a 16-15 victory over New Mexico. They went 6-2 the rest of the season, and the next year improved a 7-3 overall record. The National Football Foundation selected Gifford Nielsen to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1994. Nielsen played professionally with the Houston Oilers from 1978 through the 1983 season. Our next birthday is a linebacking legend. October 25th, 1964, that's when Pat Swilling, a linebacker from Georgia Tech, celebrated his arrival into the world. An article from SI.com on the football great tells how Swilling was a pass-rushing standout at Georgia Tech, setting an NCAA record 7 sacks against NC State as he went on his way to become the first team All-American that year. The National Football Foundation selected Pat Swilling to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2009. The New Orleans Saints picked Pat Swilling in the third round of the 1986 NFL Draft, and he ended up having a brilliant 12-year career in the league. In 1992, Swilling, along with fellow Saint linebackers Vaughn Johnson, Sam Mills, and Ricky Jackson, all made the same Pro Bowl roster. That was the first and only time that has ever occurred in NFL history. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.